really what's going on and you are authentic. Okay. The second column was passive, it's people who just withdraw. Then was the aggressive one. Okay. And then the fourth column was a passive-aggressive stuff. And they ask us to, before we fill the questionnaire, to say, okay, just for yourself, fill in where you think you are going to end up after this questionnaire. So, for me, colon aggressive, zero. That's why I knew there will be probably nothing in there. Passive, that's going to be probably very high. Assertive, I hope there will be some. Okay? And then with this passive-aggressive, I had no clue what they were speaking about. So I put nothing. So I did the test, and at the end of it, I realized that the passive-aggressive and the passive were the same height. There was nothing in the aggressive, I knew that, and there was some in the assertive. So okay. I was doing something good. But it was a shock to me, and then I spoke to my wife about it, how she was perceiving me and experiencing me. When I got silent, when I was withdrawing, often staying in the room, but I just get silent. Okay? And I still do it under high stress in those days, although I've gone really miles from that. And she said, for me, this is extremely aggressive what you are doing. Your withdrawing, your silence is an aggression. It's not passivity. And that was a wake-up call for me. Because I thought, okay, if that's what you experience with me, that's probably what the team, what my kids are experiencing with me too. So I started to ask people what I was doing and how it impacted them. It was fascinating. It was just a weekend, a long weekend on this topic of assertiveness. But that's, I was so insecure, it was easier for me to withdraw. And that was a real switch in my family when my sister died. Until then, we're really all one, emotionally attached. I mean, I had all of that. And then came that death, and that death really, we lost an awful lot of stuff. Emotional relationship was no longer in the family. So we related, we're still together, we're doing stuff together. Emotionally, forget about it, there was nothing left. And it's interesting because in the last years, probably 8-10 years, I've been able to start talking to my parents about it. And even just recently, my father asked me for forgiveness for not telling me and not including us in the grieving process. But they had no clue what to do with it in their own life. So we knew that they were crying because we were hearing them in their bedroom, but there was absolutely no inclusion of my brother and me in that. Okay, and that brings a whole insecurity instead of that place where you feel welcome, you can be with your own grief, and no, I couldn't, so I was just playing everything is okay. And after 3 weeks, yeah, it's good to speak about the death of your sister for 2 weeks at school, but after 2-3 weeks, they have enough of it. And then there was no space. So for 15 years, never spoke about it. Okay, and that gave this sense of disconnection, of insecurity, of sometimes rejection, but more a kind of, I don't know the word exactly, because it was not rejection, I didn't felt rejected, it was more a kind of neglect in this emotional area in my life. And when you think, I'm telling that as a non-TCK now, okay? But when you think of all the losses that families go through that are in mission, and we're not just talking about transition from land, it's transition of your best friend that are leaving, it's transition from maybe organization, it's transition from land, it's the loss of whatever, people, death, and so on, and so on, and so on. There's a long list of that. And often the way that the parents deal with those things, it's going to impact the kids in big ways. And you will find that in family debriefing. Okay? You will find those dynamics where the kids don't speak about the painful places. And it's not that they don't want to speak about it. They don't want to add more to the pain that their parents go through, so they just keep quiet. And their parents, you hear them saying to you, oh, my kids, they are doing really well. They adapt superb. And you go, yeah, okay. And we'll speak about that in a minute. And out of that place of more disconnection, then there is fear, panic, anxiety that is going to step up in our lives. And these are just two pictures that may reflect a little bit that place, those needs for family. It's going to release stress symptoms in lives, depression maybe, conflict, hostility, doubt, suffering, powerlessness, anger, critics, judgment, control, demands, withdrawal, silence, being clingy. Do you know what that means? Someone who is just, okay? You see those kids sometimes at Carrefour or whatever, Landl, Landly, what is it? Lidl? It's Lidl? Yeah, Lidl, right? Whatever, shopping center you go to. Detachment, maybe another one, okay? And for me, I start there when we speak about family debriefing, because you are going to face that when you debrief families. You will really quickly find out a family and sense that family who has quite a lot of attachments. But you will have in debriefing families who have lost that are in that place. Okay? And those working with families is a need, not just for them to be able to whatever. For me, it's a need to bring them from that place, if they're in that place, and we're all in that place somewhere in our families, if we're true to ourselves, to move them from that place to the first slide. To help them to grow, to move, to journey to this place of attachment. And that movement will happen only by talking and expressing that love. It will not happen by training them and giving all the theory. They will need to practice. Okay, and as member care people, that's my heart, that's my passion, is to see this movement happening in life. And maybe just one testimony of a family that we had in one of the family debriefing. They had three kids, teens, 10 to 16 about. And one of them, the middle one, he was in that place, totally disconnected from the family, lost in his iPad. And although the parents were giving really strong rules, he found every way possible to break those rules, okay, and boundaries. So he would find the key for their bedrooms and close himself in their bedrooms during the family debriefing week and just play the whole morning instead of going into the sessions. And it was interesting because the owner or the director of that place observes quite a lot. He's very present. He's not in the session with us, but he's observing. They are serving us. And he came one day to me quite early in the week, and he said, what's going on with that boy? I said, yeah, well, so we talked to the parents. We tried to talk to the kid and so on. And the amazing thing is that towards the week, we had family times where they could just share as a family. Sometimes he was there, sometimes not. At the end of the week, we lead them to a time at the cross. We didn't know if he would come, not come, we had no clue, but we prayed a lot. And that child came later, but he sat very silent with his family at the cross, and then he just took something out of his pocket, small piece of paper, and he just put it at the cross. 2 hours later, the director of that place comes to me and he says, what happened with that boy? And I said, what happened what? I said, this is no longer the same boy that we had the whole week. He has totally changed. He's talking. We can see his face, had quite long hair. But his hair were always, I can do it because mine are not very long. But you know, that's this kind of face that you see the whole week, you know? And all of a sudden, you could see his eyes, you could see his face. He was talking with his parents again. That was just one of those miracles, you know? And for me, when I see these things happening, I go, yes, Lord. Yes, that's great. That's my passion. That's what I want to see. The process can be really tough. Okay, you will struggle, you will have all kind of stuff. But that's the place where I want to come and see people going and see God really meeting and encountering them. In all of this, you will come into those places that I describe in the black side here, okay, black and white. And then you add to all of this the challenges of TCK life. I've mentioned just the losses, but there are many other challenges. We talked this morning about belonging, we talked about identity, we talked about a lot of other things that are related to the life of a TCK. And one of the things that I'm working in now is just to look just in the area where I live. And I was talking to Esther about it just before. It's probably 70%, if not more, of the kids in our area, Geneva, that are TCKs. And probably 65% of them don't know they are TCK. It's crazy, huh? In our church, in my church where I go, 100% of the kids are TCK. And you go, wow, what do we do? Yeah? But you see those dynamics in families going on. You see that it's in your, when you observe a little bit what's going on, bam, you are there, you know? So now I'd like to move a little bit from there and just share about the benefits of family debriefing. Because we all know in the member care that debriefing is something that has come more and more normality now, or it's accepted. It's done by a lot of organizations, not all, but it's in a much better place than it was 15, 20 years ago. There's a lot that is done for the adults. There's more and more that is done for the TCKs. And for me, the passion that God has put in my heart is, where do we have those families talking together? So the parents go can come to reality with what's going on with their kids. Maybe they have a good assumption, but most of them, they are miles away from the reality of their kids. And where the kids can hear from their parents what's going on for them. It's not all we are strong, let's do it, God is with us, yeah, it's good, but we're struggling, okay? And I think for me that comes from that place of when I lost my sister, because I lacked my parents just sharing with us what was going on for them. The helplessness, the hopelessness, the anger they had, it's coming up now, but it's 40 years later, okay, or more. And I'm glad it's coming and we can talk about it. Okay. So, benefits of family debriefing. The first one is that I think it's to foster God's heart for families. That's his heart, it's his plan. So we are going to foster, we are going to help those families and empower them to be a place of attachment, of security, of home, a haven for them. Not just physically, but emotionally, spiritually, whatever. And if you look now at the whole challenge of the refugees, most of them are alone. They don't have families anymore. Most of them, or a lot of them, are boys. 16, 17, 18, 19, whatever. Where do we go? And the way we do church is not giving them that. They need families. They don't need meetings. They need community. They need a place where they feel that love, acceptance for who they are. Wherever they come from, whatever they have experienced, that's what they need. There's a lot of challenge in that. But there's a lot of challenges in our own families too. Okay? So we foster, I believe, when we do family debriefing, God's heart for families. Then we want to encourage each family member to give the puzzle pieces to the whole in order to create our story out of my story. Okay? So I just have two pictures here. It's in Africa, because it's something I started to do in Africa, in Burundi, where they have no clue what debriefing is all about. So we explained to them what we're going to do for 1 week with them. They had experienced a murder, so we said, okay, you all have a piece of what happened. That's what you know. That's your knowledge. And so we gave them each one puzzle piece, like that, or two. And then the translator came to me and he said, you know, Christian, nobody, none of them know what a puzzle is. And you go, okay, help God. What do we do? Okay? And it was interesting. I had a picture in my pocket or in my suitcase about this size. And I told them, you know, we do something crazy in the West. We take a nice picture like that, and we just cut it in pieces. And they look at you like, okay, why do you do that? And then I said, you know, we do that in order that later you mix all those pieces and you make the picture again. You know, it's crazy. How do you explain a puzzle to an adult that has never seen a puzzle? You know? And when you have to explain that, it's normal for us. But for someone who has never seen that, never done that, they go, are you crazy, guys, or what? You know? Don't cut it in the first place, and you have a nice picture, you know? So, but they understood it. And for me, it's the same in family debriefing. Because we think that we know, especially with families who experience life together, we think that we know what everyone has gone through. And it's an assumption we have, and you know how they felt and what's going on for them, but you don't. And debriefing families is encouraging each one, even if one doesn't want to be there. You say, okay, that's okay if you don't want to be here. Are you willing to be here for the rest of the family and give just your piece of the puzzle for them? And most of them do it. They say, okay, if it's for them, I'm willing to do this. But they don't want to work and to be confronted in their own life. I don't want to do debriefing now. So we just invite them to serve the family with and to give to the family this piece of the puzzle. And with the aim of creating our story. Otherwise, it's my story. And you can think about even the TCK while sitting in the room. Is it my story? If I talk for you now, okay? What I have gone through, or do you have it's our story? Because it's shared, it's known by the rest of the family. Okay, so that's a question you can wrestle with yourself. Then, in every debriefing, family debriefing that you are going to do, and any debriefing at all in mission, you will always have pieces of the puzzle that are going to be missing. Always. If you experience a crisis, there will always be pieces that will not be there. That was one of the things I struggled for very long in the grief of my sister, but it helped me when my mother-in-law committed suicide not to go the same path. Is that I wanted an answer to one question. Why? Why? And I was stuck in my grieving in that question. Why? And I was working that about 15 years after her death with a counselor, and I was sitting in the room, and he took a chair, put it in front of me, and he said, okay, God is sitting here, and you ask him your question, why did my sister die? I had my own answer already, because she died, it makes me wonder about life purpose and so on, and I found Jesus. That was my answer. But I still had deep down, why did she die? Okay? And he just offered me that. Okay, let's say God is sitting here and you ask him a question and he gives you an answer. How is it going to help you? And what do you need? And at that moment, I had something that happened in probably 20 seconds. It was very, very quick. I love skiing from Switzerland, no wonder. Okay? But I was in the Lauberhorn. Do you know the Lauberhorn race? It's one of the most difficult with Kitzbühel. Okay? If you are not in the ski thing, that's okay. And I was just not doing the race, but just being on those pistes. Okay? And doing just the beginning, the start of that race. Okay? It's not like this, it's like this, but when you go straight, you go quite quick. And I fell. And I stood up again. But I saw myself having this accident, but instead of being able to stand up again, my knee was here, and I had one of the bones that was coming up and the other one here. Okay? And that was the first picture. Second picture, I saw myself in front of the doctor, the GP, surgery guy. And I asked him with anger, why is my leg like this? Third scene, I saw the guy tell me why my legs were like that. And the fourth scene that I saw, everything really quick, okay, was me thanking him for that and going away. And you go, what about your leg? But you see, that's where he was at with God. Why? I need an answer. And you don't need an answer. And that counselor said to me, is this an invitation from God to trust him with your unanswered questions, with those puzzle pieces that are not there? Is he inviting you to trust him with those questions and to let him come and heal you, touch the pain? That was, for me, a defense mechanism, that question. Okay? And then he said something that I will always remember. He said, if God would give us answers to all our questions, we would have more questions. Because his ways are not our ways, and his thoughts are not our thoughts. And for me, as he said that, it was, oh yeah, okay. But you see, that's the foolishness of the cross. It's trusting him in faith with stuff that we are not going to have answers. And are we okay with that? Because you will let someone touch the pain only when you let those questions go. And the third benefit of family debriefing is to hear the joy and challenges from each or part of the members of the family, how this impacts them individually and in their relationship, and how they can support one another and move forward. That's a little bit that place of the cross with that boy that I shared with you before. I've experienced this so many, so many, so many times. When families come to a place of reconciliation, of forgiveness, either what they need for themselves, either in their relationship, and then you can say, okay, and now how are you going to express and live out of this new place? Because it's good to be reconciled and to forgive, but then you need to live that one out. Okay? So, but with family debriefing, there are some challenges. Those challenges are the family system that you are going to encounter, the family dynamics that you are going to encounter, the family communication that you will encounter, family relationships, the family culture, and each family has a different culture. So you know what culture means because you have been moving between culture, all of us, we have done that. Okay? And every time you are going to meet with a family, you enter in a new country. Don't assume that you understand their culture. You don't. They are the professionals. And you need to find out. You need to be inquiring. What is the culture of that family? Is it trust? Is it no trust? Is it good communication? Is it not? Is it judgment, criticism? Is it empowerment, affirmation? What is it? So that this is a real challenge when you work with families, because you work with all of these. Then you will face unhelpful roles that have been taken by certain members of the family. Some may come into the rescuer role. And every time someone says something, they are going to rescue them. If there is someone that starts having a few tears, already there are forearms around this person. What is the message? Don't cry. Yeah, we want to comfort you, but don't cry. So the way you can do something about it before starting, you just tell them, if someone cries, it may happen, the tissues are here. And you are responsible to take a tissue for yourself, and if you want someone to give you a tissue, you ask. But nobody is going to give a tissue if it's not requested to another person. Just a simple way. And a 7-year-old, 5-year-old, they can understand that. They will do it. Okay? When speaking for other people, I had moms, especially, speaking, answering for the kids. Sometimes it's the dads too. Correcting, that's more the dads. Oh no, it was not like this. It was like this. And you have to nicely and lovingly tell them, shut up. I have used those words sometimes. Just shut up. It's not your turn. I will tell you when it's your turn. And if it goes on really too often and you have said shut up in different ways, then you say, okay, this is a microphone. Now I give it to you because you are the one that talks now. And as long as this person has the microphone in her hand, nobody talks. Okay? And I would go to the point where this person, I ask her, do you feel understood by the rest of the family? I would ask feedback from the rest of the family. What did you understand this person said? I remember once a small boy, he said, I need from my family encouragement. 7 and a half he was. It's quite something, huh? I need encouragement from my family. And then I said, okay, so did you hear what he said? Nobody heard it. None could say and repeat what it was just said. So I said, okay, now you listen. Can you please repeat what you said? I need encouragement for my family. And they were always big eyes. And then I said to him, the guy, the small boy, how can I do that? And he had three very clear ideas how his parents and his siblings could help him. It was fascinating. So, you know, don't mess the age of the people and what they can, what they can't. Okay? Some people will struggle if they are 35, while a 7-year-old will just be, you know, and it comes out. And sometimes it's the opposite. That's okay. The parroting is a big one. And I'll just give you one example. It was a family with two... I will read you a poem from one of the guy. It was two teens, 18 and 15. They had moved an awful lot in their life. Different countries, different continents, and so on. And the oldest one was very, very angry, depressed, but we didn't know that before they came. Okay? So first session, we just do a kind of contracting with them and trying to find out how we are going to work with them as a whole family or separate or times together or separate or whatever. And the parents didn't want to talk first, so he started when we said, okay, how do you want to work this week? We have 5 days together. And he was sitting like this, looking on the floor. And he said, if they are sitting in the room, I'm not talking. And I said, okay, thank you. Then I went to the brother, said, okay, what about you? If they are sitting in the room, I'm not talking either. That was parroting. It was not from him. It was just parroting what his brother just said. Okay? So what do you do? That's the start of 5 days debriefing. Yay! Let's go! And we talked with the parents. They didn't know what to do. The dad was extremely passive. The mom was super anxious, looking at him like, you know, just asking everything of him, but nothing was coming. And you could just see her just disappearing. He was disappearing in wherever he was going. And so we decided at the end my colleague would take the parents, I would take the boys, and the boys separately. Okay? So I started to work with the oldest one. And sometimes you have to do that. You have to find out how do you work with a family that is dysfunctional. Because they are not all functional. Okay? And so I worked with that with the oldest one. And he started like this. Christian, you can ask me any question, I will answer to any question you ask. And I was caught up in his game for 2 days. Feeling after 2 days, I'm the KGB. Just throwing question at him, he would answer. Boom. And then he was waiting for the next question. And I had enough questions for 2 days, which is not bad. But I called my supervisor after 2 days and I said, okay, I'm sick of that. I feel like I'm the KGB, I'm the policeman, I'm just asking those questions. Yes, he gives answers, but there's nothing in it that says where he's at. And my perception, he's extremely depressed, probably suicidal, I'm not sure. I tried to ask these questions, but he didn't answer those ones. And I don't know what to do. And my supervisor is a good guy. He never gave me answers. It's a good supervisor. Yeah, I love him. Sometimes not so love, but it would be good sometimes to know. So he helped me to just go within me and say, okay, what is going on in you, and so on. And then I came up with a crazy idea just to ask him, what is your hobbies? So that was one more question. But that was a question where I was hoping he would give something out of maybe a bit more personal. And he was a bit surprised by the question, but he said, you know, it's something I've shared with many people. I said, okay, but are you willing to share with me? And he said, yeah, I write poems. And for me, all the lights went blang, 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 blang. Why didn't you get to that place 2 days ago? Okay, so I said, would you be willing to show me a few of your poems? So I'm going to read one for you. It's not the first one he read to me, but which one do you want? I Am a Stranger or Pain? Pain? Okay, let's go for the pain one. Pain is the thing that haunts your soul, caresses your hurt in you as a blood-drinking mule. Pain is the tears that cannot be seen, and though you wishes they were wiped off by God in your dream. But how to cure what cannot be felt, since it in your soul did melt? Inseparable, a burden for seemingly eternity, with no hope in the end of the tunnel that you can see. You catch up the depression, the hopelessness, the helplessness in that? Cling to the being you know as God, haunted in your dreams by what looks merciless as a rod. Cruelty is your pillow at night. It speaks about how he slept. Okay? Tears your comfort for the endless fight that rages through the dark corners of your mind, wishing in the end that you are better off mute and blind. Wearing a mask ain't an easy thing, but we cannot leave our soul to what seems as weakness cling. To be bent till you are broken, to have emptiness as a reminding token, to be lost in what you thought was real, deception is all what you feel. To wish to reverse time, to wonder what would have been on the other flip side of the dime. To lose the pieces of your soul that you gave, seeing nothing but empty life and your grave. Can you catch up with what's going on there? Okay, that was quite a serious case, this one. But know that nothing happens without a reason. Although you would accuse God of treason, know that he ain't for no reason is called a healer. For his word is his word. He ain't a deceiver. Reason why may never be known. But without this, you would never have grown. He gives us at times the hard way, so that is why I will just say, God knows the heart better than you think. From certain fountains he lets you drink, but he knows what is the best, and follow him and you will be blessed. And you see, that was that place for me where I was able to catch where he was at in his depression, in his suicidal thoughts, in his sleepless nights, and I could start asking questions out of that. That was his reality. At the same time, although a lot of his poems are very negative, there was always a little glimpse of hope in that, okay? And I think his parents already, it was a very dysfunctional family. They did something good, in a sense, because there was something that was left in his heart of God. Okay, and the end of this speaks about that hope that he still has somewhere, although it's very far away, okay? And for me, that was just a way, sometimes you have to really find that place in people. Okay, and it has been, I worked 3 days just to get to this. Okay, and once we were there, that was, man, wow, you know, when did you write that? What was going on in your life? And that's where he was starting to really relax, and the trust was there, because I was interested in him and just asking questions. See, the question, but he put me in that game. That was a protection for him. As long as you ask questions, I am in control, because I am in control of what I give you as an answer. That's all this nice facade. With this one, I went behind the facade. Okay, and again, I have permission to use that from him. So that's one of those places where you work with those people. Eh? Then you have the individual story of one member that maybe doesn't want to share in the family context. Safety, that's a big topic. We're not going to cover that, but that's something, if you work with families, you have to deal with safety issues. You have to have something that you sign, that they sign, that they know under whom you work and with what kind of guidelines you work and so on. And then the children age you work with, that's a challenge. If you have small or teens or a mix, quite broad. One time the youngest one was 4.5 and he wanted to be in the debriefing. And then the oldest one was 14. So you have to be super flexible when you work with families, okay? So I'm going to pass just this case study I gave you, the one with the poem. Limitation of family debriefing. This is an important one. If your family have experienced a crisis or a trauma, you may want to encourage the parents to first seek debriefing or counseling. And then to do it as a family. I put this in brackets, that's the ideal. Okay? Very often the family either doesn't have the time to have to put 2 weeks aside, or they don't have the money for it. Okay? So they would say, okay, we cannot do 2 weeks, we are going to come just as a parent, you say, okay, or we are going to come just as a family, can you take us? And then you have to explain that the way that you are going to work with them is on a kid's level. And if there is anything that they need to share that is not kids appropriate, details of that are important to them and so on, then you can offer them to meet with them individually as adults. Okay, I do that very often when I debrief families. I would offer at the beginning of the week, we do it as a family. At any time you can ask if you want you the kids or you the parents to meet with me alone, just ask. That's your responsibility. And I repeat it through the week. Okay? So that's one. That is a limitation. The other limitation is if you have a family that comes and there is a parental conflict or conflict between parents and a child. And that can be quite challenging to work with, especially if it's the parents who are shouting at one another all the time in front of the kids. You know it's something that happens at home if they do it in front of you. At the same time, you need to know how to manage that. And sometimes in those cases, I would take the parents on their own and say, okay, are you aware of what you are doing and how it's impacting you and the children? And I would sit with the children just to see how they are coping in that setting. Okay? And then what I do when I take them separately, I always ask them and encourage them, what is it from the half hour or hour that we've spent together individually that you want to give back to the family? So it's not a secret. Some of the stuff you don't have to say. Okay? But what is it you want to give back to the family? Just one word, two words about the time we had together. I'm not imposing. Some people don't want to say anything. I say that's okay. But you are going to say to the rest of the family when we start again that you had a time with me and you don't want to share anything from that time with them. But I want them to take responsibility. Okay? And then parents or child who is very emotional, negative, critical, depressed, disrespectful. And sometimes you have to be very, not mean, but how can I call that? You need to be loving, but you need to be very strict too, firm. Okay? And I've done sometimes where I stand in the middle, because we often sit in with a family in circle, and I just say, okay, guys, we have 1 minute silent now. Just shut up, everyone. What is going on for you now that you are so heat up to one another? And sometimes you can train them in very brief, small things. Just to say the same thing, what's going on in me, but instead of shouting, to speak it in I statement, this is what's going on for me. So in it's not your main aim, but sometimes you can give some tools and have them practice the tool. Okay? Sometimes you have maybe one member who has no will, desire, to do a debriefing, to speak, and you have to respect that. That's why I invite them to do it, to give to the family, okay? And one of the limitations is when you meet with a family, it happened to me 2 weeks ago, I met with a family, they have 5 kids, 4 of them were already back in the home country, but they were all working, so they could not come for the debriefing. And the debriefing was the last child, she was 17, plus the parents. Okay? And I have been talking with them, what are you going to share with the rest of the family of this week, of this process? Because at different points I was saying, oh yeah, that would be good too, and that would be good too, and you know. And I said, okay, how are you going to do that? Yep.
That situation with the family in Greece, and there was had been an affair with them.
Yeah.
when you grieve thing.
Yeah.
And she was wondering if she had for her, if she was part of the family.
Okay, I give you an example of that one. I had a family from Afghanistan again who came. They had a team member. She was not just a nanny. She was a team member, but she lived with them. And she was part-time taking care of the kids. One was born there, so he was very small. He grew up as a baby. And she took care of that. He was already, what, 3? He was 6 and a half, I think, or 7 when I met him. That was the youngest of the family, okay? And she had been 3 years with them, okay? And it was really interesting because they asked her to come in the role of taking care of the kids. But that meant that she was with us most of the time. And then I worked with balloons at times. those are just tools. But the balloon is your life, and then you have ropes, and those ropes is what is anchoring me in the country. Okay, so I had them do that. And for this little boy, he put on one of the rope the name of this lady. Okay? And then when we come to the losses and what you cannot take with you and so on, so you have this small boy with his balloon and he's taking one by one, you know, okay, the house and blah, blah. And then he takes a rope with the name of that lady and she's standing there. Already with tears, you know, crying and so on. And he just looks at her and he's, I can't remember her name, but it doesn't matter. Mary, we're not going to see one another again. Because she was from a different continent. And she could hardly say no, because that was her letting go too. That was her grief. And then he said, so, I have to cut you then? And you know, it was such an emotional moment, a funny moment at the same time. Just the way he acted, you know, he was just so, you know, kind of, that's, you know, that's life. But for her, she said at the end of the week, she said that this was really meaningful to me because she had a really special attachment to this boy. And, you know, sometimes it's something you can offer, but it's that's the only one that I have had someone who worked as a nanny or as a nanny who acted as a nanny. That's the one and only time that I've had that. But those people need to work definitely on debriefing themselves because that's part of their losses. Yeah. So I see the time just going and running. You will get the PowerPoint. I'm not going to speak too much about that. The consideration and guidelines, I think it's self-explanatory. This is a really good one that I like, those two things. When you work with families, be flexible, okay? Because the way you work with this family is not going to work with the next one. And I really love that thing here. If plan A didn't work, the alphabet has 25 more letters. Stay cool. Yeah. So, yeah, we could go on, what is your role and so on. Let me just finish with one more poem, because I think that's one of the greatest reward is when you work with families and you see them sitting at the cross as family. I get out of the picture. I let the lead to the parents, often to the dad, even if it's not his role normally. I would say, okay, who is leading? But I would encourage you as a dad to take that role for this time. You lead that time at the cross. And for me, I'm sitting a bit, I'm withdrawing a little bit. So it's just you and Jesus and God and the Holy Spirit. And it's just fascinating the stuff that pops up from the week in that place. I've seen kids, 2 daughters, sitting on the laps of their parents and one of them getting asleep. Shalom. Fascinating, huh? And in that, I'd like to just read one thing that is coming from a TCK, and this is my daughter. And then I'm going to read how two different people have said goodbyes to one, the place or the country they've been in, and the other one to a person that she lost. So I just shored it up a bit. Just need to find where it is. This is definitely, I can definitely say that this season is a hard season. And even though at times it's tough, I cannot thank the Lord enough for allowing me to walk through this season with him, because he's preparing the soil of my heart to be fruitful, steadfast, and a soil of revival. The Lord is pursuing hearts above anything else, and it starts with yours. We cannot push away and deny our own hearts while hoping to impact other hearts. Denying our own hearts is refusing to accept a part of God's heart, and ultimately it's refusing to believe he is good enough, strong enough, to invade the deepest parts of our being and bring transformation to the darkest and most painful parts of our hearts. And when my daughter read this to me, I went, wow. And this is something I'm using now, and I will send it to you. I will include that in the PowerPoint. I encourage people to start with their own heart. It's not about my kids. It's not about, it's about us as a family, but it has to start with me. And it's a hard season. It's not about stuff out there. And if we refuse that, then we refuse part of God's heart and what he wants to do in our life. And I thought, wow, that's quite provoking, but it's great. So here are two other, one was a song that they sang as a family, but the kids sang that, they wrote it, and they were quite musicians. It's about N'Djamena. And the other one is about a girl that died in a car accident with her mom and another woman on the field. And that was the best friend from one of the kids in that family. And during the course of the debriefing, she realized she had never said goodbye. She had never let go of her. And so I'm going to read those two things to finish. N'Djamena, the sun will soon set down. I have to go. But it will be nice tonight just to say goodbye to you. You have been my mother, my homeland, however, not long enough for me. And they had been 18 years, I think, in the country. And even before even leaving, I already miss you. N'Djamena, girl of light, girl of sun. N'Djamena, girl of desert, girl of Sahel. Before I leave, before my heart gets cold, I will take the last sunbeams to not forget what your wings shelter. N'Djamena, Iyakwelbi, my heart, my love. I have to go. Do not cry. Alaleki, please. Inshallah, I will come back. The sand winds will fly away, taking away the sweet smell of grilled meat, the burst of laughter, the sounds of the market, the smiles of your children. All this will fade away. Language, their musics, the sai and all the other traditional dances, the balafon, the sitar, and the djembe. In my heart, I want them to stay forever. N'Djamena, Iyakwelbi, my heart, my love. I have to go. Do not cry, Alaleki, please. Inshallah, I will come back. I will proclaim to the world your patience, your courage, your strength, your perseverance. I want to forget everything that sometimes gave me the desire to go far from you. To those who have never known you, I will tell you myth, tales, and stories. To those who have never seen you, while I promise you, I will give them the desire to see you. Beautiful, eh? And it's not a goodbye, I know. It's not just a goodbye. It's accepting the reality of letting go, accepting the reality that there were nice things in N'Djamena, but there were things that they didn't like. They wanted to go away from that place. But then taking all of that and saying, there's a future. I'm going to be an ambassador for you. Okay? So it's fascinating, all the concept of that, and they sang it at the cross. And this was another family about this girl, her best friend, and we'll finish with that one. She smiled so often. She was then only a child. She left so quickly. She abandoned me. I screamed. I cried. I kept calling her. But she was already gone. Everything was so quiet, though. Nothing should have happened. She was sleeping. She didn't see the danger coming. Her eyes remained closed. Her little body crushed. She never woke up again. She was everything her best friend can be. She was everything to be loved and accepted. And for me, she will always be my little angel. I would have liked her to stay a little longer. I would have liked to have a little more time. I could have tried to hold her back. I shouted, cried, tried to call her. I know she will never come back. She was everything a best friend can be. She was everything to be loved and accepted. And for me, she will always be my little angel. I imagine her all beautiful in her white dress. And I remember this great white sheet. So many words were written, but my tears hid them. I remember only the last one saying, "A bientôt." See you soon. And that's TCK's writing, saying goodbye, accepting the loss, and at the same time, being able to move forward. And on that journey, you have the cross. But the cross is not the end, it's just the beginning. Because Jesus says, "I'm the way, the only way to the Father." And my heart is for people not to get stuck in those places of pain, is to see the joy of their life, the gains, what God has given them, and what God has given them to in that place of pain. Okay? And I hope you catch a little bit of that to continue doing what you are doing. Yeah? So let's maybe pray to close. Father, we want to thank you that families are on your heart. We thank you for those of us who have families where we can really say we have experienced not the fullness of attachment, but with attachment, we have experienced a safe place. We've been loved, we've been accepted, we've been encouraged. But you know that probably some of us come from dysfunctional families where there's been pain, where there's been losses or lacks. And that's where we need to encounter you, Lord Jesus. And we all have experiences in our life where we lose, when we have broken heart. And we pray that you will come and touch us and reach out to us, and that your presence in us by your Spirit will be doing the same as when you sent an angel in Gethsemane to Jesus. And it strengthened him. It comforted him. And I pray for each one of us that your presence in us will be that comfort and will be that strength to continue the journey. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. Thank you.